Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to Argenx's fourth quarter 2015 business update and full year financial results conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a question and answer session to follow. I would now like to introduce Joerg Hornin, Corporate Communications Manager at Argenx.
Good afternoon, everybody. A press release with Argenx fourth quarter business update and full year 2015 financial result became available at 7:00 A.M. this morning and can be found also on our website. I'm joined on the call today by Tim van Hauwermeiren, our CEO, and Eric Castaldi, CFO. On slide number three, you will see a brief agenda for the call today. Tim will provide a short overview of our corporate strategy and will then talk through our pipeline. He will highlight the key achievements within each of our antibody programs and will also lay out what to expect next for the company. Eric will provide financial results for 2015, followed by some closing remarks by Tim, and then we will have the Q&A. Before we start, I'd like to go to slide two. As a reminder, forward-looking statements may be presented during this teleconference. They may include statements about our future expectations, clinical development, regulatory timelines, the potential success of our product candidates, financial projections, and upcoming milestones. Actual results may differ materially from those indicated by these statements. Argenx is not under any obligation to update statements regarding the future or to conform these statements in relation to actual results unless this is required by law. For now, I would like to turn the call over to Tim van Hauwermeiren.
Thank you, Joerg, and good afternoon, everybody. We have launched into 2016 with a lot of momentum following a busy fourth quarter of 2015. We are excited and armed to execute across all facets of our business in 2016 and expect many important milestones this year within the pipeline, through our partnerships, as well as on the corporate side. I'd like to quickly highlight some of this news before jumping into our agenda. We made progress across all three of our clinical stage programs, including one, the data we presented around ASH on ARGN-110. Two, the expansion of our ARGN-111 study into Southeast Asia. Three, the announcement of positive phase I data from ARGN-113. I will touch on each of these programs in more detail later on this call. On the partnership side, we were excited to receive our first milestone payment out of our collaboration with LEO Pharma, which we initiated just 6 months prior. We were also pleased to see gerolimumab progress into clinical development. This is our former ARGN-109 program, which we partnered with Bird Rock Bio, previously known as RayE, and we also announced some progress from our corporate endeavors, including, first of all, the appointment of Dr. Nicolas Leupin as our new Chief Medical Officer. Two, a key investment of 16 million euro from U.S.-based funds advised by subsidiaries of Federated Investors. We feel we have great value creation ahead of us, and that with our rich pipeline and productive platform, we will continue to see growth this year. With that, I would like to move to slide number five to discuss some key components of the Argenx story. Our dedication to growth and expansion over the last few years has led to the creation of an abundant pipeline across multiple oncology indications in severe autoimmune diseases. We now have four products born out of our powerful suite of technologies that have reached clinical stage in just 6 years of operation, three of which are still wholly owned by the company. The licensing of ARGN-109 to Bird Rock Bio was just the beginning of strategic partnership growth for our company. Today, we stand with three strategic alliances in place with premier pharma partners, including the previously mentioned LEO Pharma, Bayer, and Shire. We also launched a very productive innovative access program wherein we have the ability to in-license novel drug candidates from small biopharma companies and academic institutions in order to further fuel our pipeline. We announced the first of these candidates from the IAP last year. It's called ARGN-115, a checkpoint inhibitor aimed at a novel target, GARP. Between our partnerships and the Simple platform, we intend to continue growing our pipeline and believe we have real differentiated capabilities to do so. We have a proven ability to create antibodies with differentiated modes of action from our unique platforms. First of all, the Llama immune system, which is the basis of our Simple antibody technology, has shown again and again that the choice of fully human V regions is unprecedented, allowing us to modulate the biology of novel or complex targets in unique ways. In addition, our Fc engineering technologies, boosting the cell killing properties, potelligent, and the circulation time and tissue distribution properties, enhance, of our antibodies, have all achieved the in-human validation stage. Last but not least, our ABDEC technology is the basis for significant pipeline innovation under our partnerships, but also in Argenx 113. We're also in a secure financial position to achieve these goals with €42.3 million in cash at the end of 2015, not taking the federated investment into account, and with ongoing potential for milestones out of our collaborations. Moving on to slide 6, where we see our busy pipeline with ongoing phase 1 studies now of Argenx 110 and Argenx 111 in oncology and Argenx 113 for autoimmune diseases. We're equally as excited about our preclinical and cancer immunotherapy program Argenx 115. We are prioritizing the development of Argenx 113 and Argenx 110 to its clinical proof of concept, and have data readouts for both programs this year. We plan to take the partnering route for Argenx 111 and Argenx 115 on the heels of data from current studies, a phase 1b safety expansion study for 111 and preclinical activities for 115. Turning to slide 8, I would like to start with Argenx 113 today. Argenx 113 is a simple antibody that is a potential breakthrough therapy for the treatment of IgG-mediated autoimmune diseases. Patients with several types of autoimmune diseases have high levels of pathogenic IgG levels. These patients, while typically in a remissive state, are at risk for acute exacerbations or crisis. During one of these autoimmune flares, there is a rapid increase of IgG levels, which is initially treated with high-dose corticosteroids. When first-line corticosteroids are not effective, patients are treated with IVIG or plasma exchange, and in some cases, rituximab. Argenx 113 has the potential to improve upon these treatments, as it has demonstrated the ability to bring these IgG levels down, reducing their levels more quickly and for longer periods of time, as represented by the red arrow. On slide 9, we talk about the clinical rationale in one of the severe autoimmune indications called myasthenia gravis. Current treatments have shown modest efficacy with about 60% decrease in antibody levels after plasma exchange, but only about half of that in case of IVIG, which is acting too slowly. This modest efficacy is not all that durable across treatments, and with IVIG there is less than a 50% efficacy rate after 2 weeks. Another key factor is the long hospital stay associated with these treatments, ranging from 12 to 16 days. We believe that with Argenx 113, we will not only show better efficacy and more durability, but that there are also pharmacoeconomic benefits, including reduced hospitalization stay. On slide 10, we talk further about the mechanism that makes Argenx 113 so unique. In the middle top figure, we can see the normal homeostasis of IgGs. These antibodies enjoy a long circulation time in the human body because they are effectively rescued from intracellular degradation thanks to a unique interaction of the antibody Fc region with a dedicated recycling receptor called FcRn, depicted in the drawing in blue. Looking at the left, Argenx 113 is an antibody Fc region equipped with our proprietary ABDEC mutations, which dramatically increase the affinity for FcRn, effectively blocking this recycling receptor and making it unavailable for IgGs as is shown at the bottom of the middle picture. The right-hand picture shows what happens when non-human primates are injected with 1.13. Their IgG levels drop fast and can be kept low by repeat dosing of Argenx 1.13. With slide 11, I will talk through some of the data we have seen to date to support our mechanistic understanding of Argenx 1.13. We have studied the effects of a daily injection of Argenx 1.13 in mouse models of myasthenia gravis, and so over time that our antibody rapidly reduces autoantibody levels and, as a result, stabilizes disease. Next slide. We launched a clinical program of Argenx 1.13 in the fall of 2015, which is detailed on slide 12. We started with a double-blinded, placebo-controlled, single ascending dose study in healthy volunteers that read out in January this year. With the data from the SAD arm, which I will discuss on the next slide, we have in the meantime launched into a multiple ascending dose study, which should read out before the summer. We should then have the appropriate dose and safety profile to initiate the first phase 2 study in patients. The single ascending dose study confirmed to us the mechanism of Argenx 1.13 and showed favorable safety and tolerability profiles. The data also translated from the preclinical studies and showed rapid and deep IgG reductions that were maintained for several weeks. We are very excited about the prospect of Argenx 1.13 and have gotten feedback from physicians to warrant this enthusiasm. We have heard across the board that a fast-acting, efficacious therapy that is well tolerated and can be administered without an extended hospital stay would greatly fill a current unmet need among myasthenia gravis patients. We have also started benchmarking the commercial potential of this type of product, and I believe it to be very appealing. Moving on to slide number 17, Argenx 1.10. As you may recall, we are studying Argenx 1.10 in both liquid and solid tumors. We are currently running a phase 1 safety expansion cohort in patients with nasopharyngeal carcinoma, a solid tumor, and have enrolled 6 patients to date. Today, I'm going to focus more on our blood cancer study, a phase 1b safety expansion cohort in patients with relapsed refractory T-cell lymphoma. We presented our evidence of biological activity in T-cell lymphoma patients at a recent workshop we held in conjunction with the ASH conference last December. As you can see from one of our KOLs on slide 17, there has been very little progress in T-cell lymphoma survival, despite advancements in how lymphomas are treated in recent decades, with retinoids, HDAC inhibitors, antifolates, and chemo regimens. These treatments show modest efficacy, sometimes serious side effects, and are not curative. The historic difficulty in finding new, more curative therapies for these patients is multifold. First, T-cell lymphoma occurs mostly in elderly patients who are often unfit for chemo or transplant. Second, it is not only a rare disease but also an underdiagnosed disease. And third, it is very heterogeneous with many different subtypes. Early results from Argenx 1.10 in this population show activity in skin, blood, and the lymph compartment and have demonstrated potential as both a mono and combo therapy given the safety profile of the compounds. Some of these data are outlined on slide 18, which is simply giving an overview of the T-cell lymphoma patients which have been treated with Argenx 1.10 today. Activity observed in the blood compartment consists of elimination of the malignant cells in circulation in 2 out of 2 CTCL CSRI patients and normalization of their T-cell populations. We also saw reversion of hemolytic anemia in an AITL patient, allowing the patient to be independent of transfusion. Activity observed in the skin compartment consists of signs of inflammation of skin lesion, suggesting the ability of 1.10 to switch on the immune system against the tumor cells, followed by a reduction in size and sometimes number, as evidenced in 2 out of 2 CTCL CSRI patients, as well as 1 follicular T helper cell lymphoma patient. Interesting activity in the lymph compartment was seen in a patient with AITL, where all cancer lesions showed a reduction in size, up to 65% reduction. 2016 should prove to be a busy year for this T-cell lymphoma program, as now we have 6 sites up and running. Our goal is to recruit 10 cutaneous T-cell lymphoma patients, with at least 5 that have an aggressive form known as Sézary syndrome, and another 10 with peripheral T-cell lymphoma, with at least 5 that have angioimmunoblastic T-cell lymphoma. We expect to present interim data by mid-2016 and top-line data from all patients in this cohort by the end of the year. Finally, we're also looking into the possibility of initiating a combination study in leukemia based on the strong data generated by our collaborators at Inselspital in Bern, highlighting the role of the CD70-CD27 pathway in leukemic stem cell biology. Argenx 113 and Argenx 110 remain our top pipeline priorities, and we do expect to bring them through at least clinical proof of concept. We're taking a different approach with our other 2 current products, Argenx 111 and Argenx 115, with which we are hoping to partner following completion of the current studies. I'd like to dive further into these 2 programs now, starting with Argenx 111. This best-in-class simple antibody targets MET, which we know to be a receptor responsible for tumor growth and metastasis. On slide 21, you can see that Argenx 111 has several distinct modes of action. First, the blocking of tumor cell proliferation through HF-dependent and HF-independent means. Also, the destruction of MET-positive circulating tumor cells, which has been greatly enhanced through Fc engineering technology called Potelligent. Finally, increased tissue penetration and tumor targeting through a different Fc engineering technology called ENHANCE. We have seen signs of biological activity to date, which are outlined on slide 22, both during the dose escalation at doses as low as 0.3 mg per kilogram and 1 mg per kilogram, and during the safety expansion cohort, which exclusively targets MET-amplified cancer patients. I'd like to talk through some of these results we have seen in 3 patients to better understand the clinical presentation and treatment history of MET-amplified patients and the changes we see following varying number of cycles with Argenx 111. We treated a 50-year-old patient with bone mets in stomach cancer that have failed many lines of previous treatment and saw circulating tumor cells reduced by 75%. This patient stayed in total for 9 cycles on study with good quality of life, in contrast to her much shorter time on chemotherapy with poor quality of life. We also saw signs of improvement in a renal cancer patient who was able to remain on study for 11 cycles after having shown stabilization of aggressive disease after 2 cycles. We are now recruiting additional MET-amplified patients to the study, as for example evidenced by the other RCC patients shown on the slide. We are making progress with the study and expect enrollment to ramp up in 2016 now that we have 5 clinics open in Belgium, France, and 3 in Asia, where there is a high prevalence of MET-amplified cancers. I would like to close up the discussion of our pipeline with our earliest stage candidate, Argenx 115, a very exciting simple antibody targeting GARP, a novel immune checkpoint with the ability to reactivate the body's immunity to cancer by ultimately inhibiting the immunosuppressive activity of T-rex. Similarly, drugs like Yervoy turn off the immunosuppressive mechanism, allowing the body to destroy cancer cells. So we could see potential of Argenx 115 as a next generation version of this blockbuster drug. However, in contrast to Yervoy, we expect 115 to more specifically target T-rex and to have a potentially superior safety profile given our proof of concept data, showing that blocking GARP on T-rex rather than depleting T-rex is the main mode of action. Before turning the call over to Eric, I'd like to briefly elaborate on how we intend to further expand the reach of our simple antibody platform and our discovery pipeline through exciting strategic alliances and collaborations. Shire has been the poster child for how we see early collaborations molding into longer-term strategic alliances. We started with an agreement to apply our technology to crack specific complex targets within their pipeline. We received a payment to allow access to our technology and royalties and milestones on the back end should Shire development and market any antibodies to come from the collaboration. On the heels of success, having proven our ability to create differentiated antibodies and to access targets that were previously not possible, we converted a collaboration into a strategic alliance, leveraging our entire technology suite. We have launched similar early collaboration agreements with Leo Pharma and Bayer with the hopes of expanding these relationships as well. Additionally, as I previously mentioned, we have already reaped some benefits from the Leo Pharma agreement, having received our first milestone payment now that the lead cell line has been chosen in the manufacture of a simple antibody candidate for inflammatory skin conditions. I'd like to turn the call over now to our CFO, Eric Castaldi, for him to walk through the financials.
Thank you, Tim. So let's move first to slide 29. As you can see, our historical financial results reflect principally research and development expenses and operating income. The revenue lines is from upfront and milestone payments and R&D funding received under our industrial partnerships. In 2015, the revenue reached 6.9 million compared to 3.8 million in 2014. And this increase of 3.1 million euros results from the increase of revenue recognized in 2015 from the collaborations with Bayer and Shire, the partial recognition of an upfront payment received following the signature of a new partnership with Leo Pharma in 2015, and also a milestone payment received from the partner Bird Rock Bio, formerly Rui, in August 2015. The line other operating income shows an increase of 3.1 million euros in 2015 compared to 1.6 million euros in 2014. This increase is explained by the recognition of a new government grant received in 2015 from the Flemish government and the increase of tax incentive credits received from the Belgian government following the recruitment of new highly qualified research and development personnel in 2015. Moving to operational expenses, as you can see on the slide, the split of operational expenses for 2015 correspond for 81% to research and development expenses and 19% to G&A expenses, which shows that our group is really focusing on investing in its R&D activities. Research and development expenses totaled 20.6 million euros in 2015 compared to 12.6 million euros in 2014. And the 8 million euro increase in 2015 reflects increased clinical trial and product manufacturing activities, the recruitment of additional R&D expenses and consultants, and the share-based payment costs recognized in compensation for the grant of stock options to the R&D employees of the group. In 2015, G&A expenses were 4.9 million euros compared to 3.5 million euros at the end of 2014. The 1.4 million increase in 2015 is explained by additional expenses incurred for supporting activities as a public company, such as investor relations, legal and audit fees, the recruitment of new employees to strengthen the company's G&A activities, and also here the share-based payment costs recognized in compensation for the stock options granted to the G&A employees, consultants, and board members of the group. As a result, the group generated a net loss of 15.3 million euros in 2015 compared to a net loss of 10.3 million euros in 2014. And if you look at the two last items, from a balance sheet point of view, our main asset consists of our cash, cash equivalents, and current financial assets. The net cash burn for 2015 amounted to 13.6 million euros, resulting in a cash, cash equivalents, and current financial asset position at the end of 2015 of 42.3 million compared to 56 million at the end of December 2014. So if we move now to the next slide, slide 30, this slide shows that so far we have been very capital efficient in managing our activities. You have here the reconciliation between, on one hand, the various sources of funding, and on the other hand, the cumulative operating expenses of the group since inception, and the cash left at the end of 2015. As you know, the group has a business model which relies heavily on outsourcing its R&D activities through external collaborations. Therefore, most of our operating expenses are variable expenses. As you can see, we have been mainly investing in R&D with a cumulative amount of 62.5 million euros since inception. Our cumulative G&A expenses are relatively low and reflect our lean and efficient structure. The group was employing 48 people at the end of 2015. With 42.3 million euros in cash at the end of 2015, plus the 16 million euros proceeds received from Federated in January 2016, we believe that we are well capitalized to execute on our strategic plan through at least 2017, with the objective to take our product portfolio to clinical proof of concept. We will continue to focus our spending on our clinical development pipeline, and in parallel, we will continue to advance and expand the preclinical product pipeline, looking to access novel targets and technologies whilst we're building the company. To conclude on this financial slide, in the bottom, you can see the fully diluted shareholding structure of the group at the end of February 2016, with the historical shareholders holding 52% of the shares compared to 70% at the end of 2014, a free float of mainly institutional investors representing now 39% of the capital, and 9% of stock options granted to our employees, board members, and certain key consultants working on our main programs. Our goal is to continue the transition of our shareholders' base from historic venture capital investors to blue-chip, long-term institutional investors, and also to increase the liquidity and free float of our stock. And now I will turn the call back to Tim.
Thank you very much, Eric. Before we start the Q&A portion of the call, I would like to talk you through upcoming key milestones. For Argenx 113, we expect to announce top-line data from the Phase 1 program mid-year. We additionally expect to launch the Phase 2 program by the end of the year in our first indication, myasthenia gravis, and potentially announce a second indication at that time. For Argenx 110, we will provide an update on the TCL cohort at ASCO or EHA and more final data at ASH at the end of the year. We also expect to start some exciting combination studies in the third quarter, including a possible leukemia study discussed earlier today. With Argenx 111 and Argenx 115, we expect to have updates on the ongoing programs mid-year. We are energized by all this progress and by the ongoing changes we are seeing on the financial front, with new investors coming into our shareholders' base and additional cash that will allow us to execute on our ambitious pipeline program. We look forward to updating you on our next moves.
Laura, I give the word to you now for the Q&A.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. Your first question comes from the line of Ted Tenthoff of Piper Jaffray. Please ask your question.
Great. Thank you very much, and I apologize for the background noise. Excellent update, Tim, in terms of everything going on with the pipeline and the milestones for this year. I guess I have kind of a higher-level question. Just as the pipeline starts to mature, there's certainly additional opportunities to monetize the pipeline strategically, whether that be regional deals or even, in some of these interesting programs, full-out licensing. Can you give us kind of a high-level view of sort of what your partnering plans are? Obviously, the drive to data, but what of these do you think are going to be Argenx compounds for the longer term, and where do you think there's opportunities for partnership?
Well, in line with what we always said, Ted, and thank you for participating to the call,
We really prioritize the development of 113 and 110, where we have always told our shareholders we would like to take them at least through clinical proof of concepts in order to maximize shareholder value in these programs. We are also consistent in our statements that actually Argenx 111 and 15 are earmarked for partnering, and whilst we continue to execute the plan, we will actually aim to partner this program when we do feel we have maximized shareholder value under these programs. I think that's the best we can tell today, and I think we will be very consistent in executing the strategy.
I appreciate that. And just with respect to ultimately longer-term building a commercial organization, would you envision doing that both in the U.S. and in Europe?
Well, if you look at programs like 113 and 110, which are programs which you can clearly take forward in orphan indications in a credible and a manageable way, that would unavoidably include doing the clinical trials and the development of your products on both continents. So you would look at clinical trials both in Europe and the U.S. You would be interacting with both regulators, and you would be thinking about commercialization strategies in both territories.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Roderick Verhelst. Please ask your question.
Yeah, thank you for taking my questions. Three from my side. First on 113, I think it's a nice sign that you indeed are putting this one, prioritizing this one. My question is a bit, you indicate that you are also looking at the second indication. Could you give a little bit more color on what you're looking at? Is it going to be an other orphan indication, or are you looking at the bigger one? My second question is related to 115. I'm actually with strong cash position that you guys have. Why are you already looking to partner this asset? Is it already because of the deal terms that are so interesting, or is there another rationale behind it? And lastly, digging a bit in the background of your new CMO, I see that he worked on the development of Revlimid for multiple myeloma. Is it possible that you guys are looking at that as a new indication, or is it just me being getting ahead of myself? Thank you.
Thank you, Roderick, and thanks for these excellent questions. Your first question relates to Argenx 113, the choice of the second indication. The proof of concept indications we have selected for Argenx 113, the second one is undisclosed today, are actually both orphan indications, which should allow us to advance the study past proof of concept in the clinic. They're both indications which are de-risked in fact, because there is a causal correlation between autoantibodies and disease severity, which is clearly documented and proven in the literature. So think of a second type indication like MG, but we will disclose more details about the choice and the motivation for the choice later this year. Your second question relates to Argenx 115 and the point of partnering. Well, basically, our current plan is to partner Argenx 115 at some point, but we remain flexible on this. We believe 115 is indeed a very appealing asset, and that immune checkpoints are a very hot topic today in the deal-making space. So I don't want to be too prescriptive about the point where we will partner 115, but we will certainly partner it when we believe we have maximized shareholder value for this asset. The third and last question relates to our colleague, Nicola. We're very pleased to have Nicola on board with us. In principle, you should mainly look at his recruitment based on his leadership qualities and the background and experience on the clinical development front in general. Of course, his background in blood and bone marrow-associated malignancies is very useful in relation to the development of our lead programs, but I will not try to read anything there in terms of final indication choice. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from the line of David Nierengarten of Wedbush. Please ask your question.
Hey, thanks for taking the question. On 113, I had a question on if you had completed the long-term toxicity studies in animals, and therefore if you were able to think about or commence a longer term dosing regimen in the phase two, or and again, that's kind of how were you thinking about dosing in the myasthenia gravis patients, if it would be intermittent or a loading dose followed by a maintenance dose, if there's any change or additional details on your thinking about the clinical plan there. Thanks.
Well, thank you, David, for being with us today. I realize it's very early in the morning for you, so thanks for joining. The dosing of Argenx 113 is something which is currently being studied. So you're spot on. We're actually engaged in a long-term tox study to allow for longer-term dosing of Argenx 113 on the back of the shorter-term tox study which enabled the current phase 1 study. I draw your attention to the slide in the slide deck which is showing us the clinical data for the phase 1. We're going to slide 13, where you basically see the big surprise from this phase 1 healthy volunteer study. If you look at the speed and depth of elimination of IgGs, this is basically an overlay with the monkey data. Now, in contrast to the monkey data, you see that a single shot gives you an effect for multiple weeks. And actually what we're currently doing in the multiple ascending dose study, of course, is giving repeat injections to the healthy volunteers. And we're very carefully studying how sustained the effect is of IgG reduction. And I can tell you that the healthy volunteer data continue to be very encouraging. And based on the PK/PD model, we will be ready to set the dosing regimen for phase 2. So the jury is a little bit out on how the further clinical data will evolve, but we are certainly getting ready as a company to engage in longer-term dosing and different dosing paradigms in patients.
And when might you have the long-term toxicity animal studies done? Is that second half, or when are we? When is that going to be complete?
Yeah, we have not communicated about the timing for this study, but you will certainly hear from us later in the year, David, on long-term tox.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Jan de Kerpel. Please ask your question.
Hello, thanks for taking my question as well. Regarding Argenx 113, I know this is very early days, of course, and it's a very novel approach, but there are a few other companies working on with similar molecules, one of them being a Dyax product now in the hands of Shire. I just wanted to know, do you have already information, preclinical or other, that allows you to differentiate Argenx 113 from these molecules? Secondly, with respect to the GARP molecule 115, I'm not really sure if I fully understood that. Of course, you want to partner this at the right time, but does it mean that you won't go with the molecule into the clinic? Can you just clarify the strategy over there? And then, thirdly, it was already discussed by previous people. Combination therapy is very important, and partnering also. With the anti-CD70 molecule and the GARP molecule, you definitely have some quite unique mode of actions over there. In terms of combination therapy, do you see yourself doing some combination therapies, or in terms of partnerships, should we expect something from that angle with some innovative deal-making? And then finally, a very small question for Eric. Can you give us any guidance on the cash burn for 2016?
Thank you, Jan, and thank you for your excellent questions. The first question, I believe, relates to the differentiation of Argenx 113 versus, for example, a full-size monoclonal antibody targeting FcRn. You're right, there is a Dyax program we're aware of, which is either in late-stage preclinical or now also early-stage phase 1 clinical trials. We have not seen any human volunteer data for that molecule. The program may also be delayed to a certain extent based on the acquisition by Shire. But what we at least conceptually discuss with Sally Ward, remember that we have actually in-licensed the technology from Sally, the ABDEC technology, and the concepts of Argenx 113, of course, has been heavily discussed with Sally.
we believe that conceptually there is value in having a monovalent interaction of an Fc portion with FcRn, because FcRn is a target which is widely expressed on endothelial and epithelial cells, and there is at least a conceptual safety concern associated with the decoration of FcRn in a bivalent fashion, where you would basically attract immune effector cells by all these free Fcs decorating FcRn cells to these tissues. So we believe that is conceptually an important and attractive differentiation, at least from a safety point of view, maybe from an efficacy point of view. But frankly speaking, Jan, the jury is out. We will have to study the clinical data if and when they become available. On Argenx 115, let there be no misunderstanding. This company is bringing Argenx 115 forward as fast as we can. We are well capitalized to do that. We actually continue to bring the program forward as fast as we can to IND filing, and that means that we're involved in the typical preclinical and IND-enabling studies for Argenx 115. Finally, combination therapy, and there we have to be careful that we're not disclosing any non-public information. It is obvious, Jan, that for players like an anti-CD70 antibody or an anti-GARP antibody, you would be looking at combination therapy. We all know that in immunotherapy, PD-1 and PD-L1 are likely going to be the backbone of cancer therapy, and it is obvious for a company like Argenx to study, at least preclinically, how the combination works out with a PD-1, PD-L1 antagonist. And we have not communicated about our strategy or our deal-making activities on the partnering side of things. The only thing we have said today is that the company is carefully studying the possibility to do a combination study for Argenx 110 in leukemia, again, based on logical and solid preclinical data which we have presented during the ASH conference. So bear with us and allow me to defer more answers to this question for later. And on the question about the burn rate, so as indicated, we had 42.3 million at the end of the year. We received 16 million from Federated, so it means we started the year with, you know, just below 60 million euros. And as indicated, we believe we have sufficient cash to finance all our activities until at least the end of 2017, which is a very conservative statement, I have to say. It will all depend on the indication and the design of our forthcoming phase 2 trials for our lead compounds. So what you see for 2016 is that, yes, we're going to have an increase in burn rate, since we are doing more clinical trials, but still phase 1 trials, most of it. I mean, the phase 2 trials cost will start at the end of 2016, so you won't see a significant impact from that angle in 2016, but you're going to have all the costs related to the recruitment of the clinical development team that we are currently recruiting, actually. So it's going to be, for 2016, above what we had for 2015, but still, the main of the cost, the big part of the cost will be in 2017 and 18 with the start of the phase 2 trial.
Okay, thank you.
We have no further questions at this time. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from the line of Mark Popisilic. Please ask your question.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my questions. Just a couple. I apologize if they're covered in the slide deck. I haven't been able to access it. But I was wondering on 110 with the nasopharyngeal carcinoma, if you could just, any detail you could give us on the rationale for targeted indication, the extent to maybe its unmet need or the mechanism of action leads in that direction, or if you have any preclinical data that points in that way. And then on 115 on GARP, is it correct to assume that from the mechanism of action, my guess is that from your sort of stable of technology platforms, it might only use the enhanced, but that the other ones don't necessarily have a role to play there, or if you could provide any clarity there. Thanks.
Thank you, Mark, and thank you very much for joining the call. Your question on Argenx-110 NPC nasopharyngeal carcinoma as such is an interesting indication because it is a high unmet medical need, especially in the East. But it's also a prototypic disease for virally induced cancers in general. NPC is caused by EBV, Epstein-Barr virus, like a number of cancers are. And interestingly, infection with EBV goes hand in hand with upregulation of the CD70 pathway. And when you talk to specialists in EBV, they're actually very familiar with this concept. It seems to be a way for the EBV-infected cell to escape from immune surveillance. Remember that CD70 has a role in B and T cell lymphomas and leukemias in terms of stimulating proliferation and survival, but there is also a documented protection mechanism through activation of Tregs by solid tumors which are upregulating CD70. So NPC is strongly CD70 positive. It's believed that this is the result of the EBV infection in an attempt to shield the tumor cells away from the immune system. That is the rationale. You know from the press release that we're currently in a phase 1B safe expansion cohort where we are recruiting stage 4 NPC patients. These are patients which are out-treated. They have failed the typical lines of available therapy, not that there is much therapy possible. Surgery is very difficult in that place of the head, very difficult, very complicated. Chemotherapy has limited effect, and by the time you have an NPC patient with stage 4 disease, basically the outlook is pretty grim. So we're studying the monotherapy activity of the drug in this type of patients. Argenx-115, we remain silent on the design of the molecule until the patents have published. It is an excellent question whether or not we're going to equip the antibody with further Fc engineering technology. It's something which we have investigated. It's something which we have patented. But it's a very competitive space, Mark, so please allow me to refrain from answering this question until the patent has published.
Understood, and thanks.
We have no further questions at this time.
I think, Laura, we can conclude here. If there are no further questions, I would like to thank everybody on the phone and everybody who has followed the webcast. Thank you very much.
That concludes the conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.